Welcome to 90834, the weekly podcast that lets you see what it's like to actually go to therapy. I'm Shannon Miller, a licensed clinical social worker currently in private practice who has the privilege of sitting across from clients each and every day watching their therapeutic process unfold. We start each episode with the same question. What took you to therapy? Today I have the pleasure of sitting across from Antonia, a woman in her mid-40s living here in the mid-Atlantic region of the United States. She's been my client for approximately 5 years. And today she's going to discuss what it's like to be in a relationship with a narcissist, how to get out of that relationship, and how she's picking up the pieces afterwards.
So when I first came to therapy, I wanted to feel a better connection to myself, mainly also because I was, in a new relationship, newish relationship, and moving into a place where I was getting close to getting married and moving into a new kind of life with someone. I had moved from California to Pennsylvania and with a partner who had children. And so there was a couple of landmines I was coming across in terms of integrating my new life with his children and also, just acclimating to my new move. And our relationship wasn't evolving maybe as it should. And so I wanted to take impetus on myself to help, my own personal growth along so I could be a better partner and be a better, person moving into this new phase and try to do it in a healthy way. So
when you started therapy, was there any bearing thing, or was it just basically overall, I need to be the best partner I can be?
I mean, the glaring things were, trying to navigate my relationship with Mark. And also, it was really to try to navigate my relationship, but also to try to understand how to. The children thing was really hard for me also. So there's the two major things. And I had turbulent relations with my father my whole life. But, again, that had something that was a topic I'd spoke with in therapy many times before. So I felt somewhat okay and grounded in that as far as I've learned what I've learned through that. I didn't know if I needed to kind of dig that back up again. But it's pretty much my relationship and understanding how to be a stepmother when I have never wanted kids myself. I've always been child-free by choice. And so here I was sort of jumping into this partnership with someone with children. So those were the main reasons.
Okay. So then once you started therapy, what happened? Where did therapy take you?
Well, it helped to start to give a understanding around around looking at my relationship in a couple of different ways that really helped to see that it wasn't all just me and that I wasn't, that there were things that I just weren't really, letting settle in my conscious mind that were, instances where, there's two people that it takes two to tango, and there's instances where he may be bringing up his old shit or his old baggage or his way of how he is that was really not conducive to a true partnership. And so it brought that up. It also brought up patterns of, I guess, the men in my life having sort of a little bit of a holier than thou kind of mentality, and also issues around the fact that, this is actually, a fact is that I actually wasn't meant to be born. My parents wanted two kids and I was born 10 years later, and I was a big mistake. And so I was definitely something that was, don't want to say not wanted, but I was told a lot by my father that he, I was a big roadblock in what he was expecting to do with his life. He only wanted two kids, and this third one comes along 10 years later. And so I think all of that brought in with me where I needed to always mold myself into little boxes for the people in my life or men in my life. So it kind of highlighted that. And then also, you know, related or unrelated, like complexity around like jealousy factors with his kids, like that I was experiencing and really ashamed of, super ashamed of it. Because, you know, it's like, you're the adult, you got to be the bigger person. Like, you know, these are just kids. These kids were, you know, at the time, you know, 6, 7 years old or so. So definitely like, you know, I should be the bigger one here. Like, they need to have a good father. And why am I being jealous of his time? So like, there's these things that kind of were brought up during therapy that I was tackling and trying to understand.
So it's interesting that you connect it back to your father and your relationship patterns. Can you speak a little bit more to that, of how you started minimizing yourself and putting yourselves in little boxes to be pleasing specifically to men?
Yeah, I mean, it's, I mean, I see it throughout my entire life. And it's mainly because, you know, again, like the more I could do that in my younger days, and even going up through when I started dating in my 20s and 30s, whatever, is I really just saw how effective it was to, you know, once you got a little bit of a morsel of someone's attention and someone has some interest in you, that I was really good at being a chameleon. In fact, there's been a couple of people who've called me that, like, you don't even really know what they're really saying. But, you know, so it was just something that it was like a way to protect myself, and to sort of ensure that I could control the way relationships were going, because I could easily just meld myself into place. And Matt really seemed like a really, you know, at the time, a great partner to be with, even though I had made that assumption from a very uninformed place, like living in California, not near his kids, on, you know, the honeymoon periods of relationships that really cloud your mind. So, yeah. So I really kind of was melding myself into place. I'm like, oh, he's kids, no problem. Yeah. No, I never wanted kids, but, like, let me see if I can do it. Like, okay, I can totally do it. You know, what's wrong with kids? They're kind of fun. They're not full time. So that means I can like have my some weekends free, and some weekends I can do this mom thing. And so it just became like almost like this way to sort of test myself, because I can always accomplish and do the thing really well. I've been able to do that even with my career, with everything I've done. Like, I've been able to kind of rock at it. So I'm like, this, sure, I can do this thing. And again, slowly but surely, just, you know, getting stripped away by this narcissist, that I wasn't even seeing happening all along the way. So, that's the part that was unexpected, was just like the bit by bit of like really kind of losing yourself along the way that you didn't even really see it happening, where, the thing is, I don't really think I had a really strong sense of self ever so much. It was just always about pleasing. So then as you're going along, and like, I used to be really creative, and then that's no longer happening, and all of these things. And then you become like, you know, just a shadow of yourself. So did that answer the question?
Yeah. So the word narcissist gets thrown around quite a bit. I mean, it seems to be the word of 2024.
Yeah.
So tell me how you can use the word for confidence. Like, do you know for sure that it's narcissistic, or what did you see in the relationship that allows you to use that term?
And again, you know, not being a clinical therapist, I don't know for sure if I'm using it right, but I think where I'm seeing it is he really tried to tear me down and keep me kind of in a box and sort of like contained. You know, his whole thing about like even being interested in me in the first place was the fact that he loved that I was creative and really like passionate and outgoing. But then that became a threat once we started being together. And then also I just noticed that the way that he would, when we would have, you know, disagreements, and by the way, disagreements are a great thing in relationships because they help you grow, you know, into better relationships and better better beings into who you are. And he brought out the worst in me. So he would use our, he would use our disagreements or my like, hey, this is something that's going wrong as a way to attack back on me. So he was never seeing it as a way that he could get closer into understanding who I am or how did you feel when I say that? Oh, well, let me tell you what I meant. And I, of course, I don't want to hurt you. So let me like rephrase that. He never saw it that way. It was always around, well, there you go again, you and your daddy issues. And, you know, you just, you're obviously broken. You obviously can't figure this out. I obviously did nothing wrong. So of course, he never did anything wrong. And even through all of the years of therapy and all of the different things that we would try to do, it would always come down to, he'd sometimes nod his head and be like, yeah, 50-50, that's how relationships are. But in the end, it was very much, you know, once the camera was off and the therapy session was over, it was very much like, okay, that was painful. You know, like, do you feel like you got what you needed out of it? And like, do you like, you just need to kind of keep seeing your own. He would tell me I need to keep seeing my own therapist. I needed to work on these things. And that, you know, he was like, I really don't see what I did wrong. There was nothing that he did wrong. So that's where I attached that narcissistic thing. He manipulated arguments all the time where I would bring out something vulnerable or something about like my father, and he would use it against me for like emotional warfare. So I knew I couldn't expose anything to him, or else he would use it against me. Oh, well, you know, because you did that, you know, it's like that. This is the reason why he tried to like diagnose me. Well, there you go. You know, there you go again. And so it was always, he was always right. I was the broken one. And also I was the one that was less valuable because I didn't have the children, you know. Well, you know, I'm the one with the children, and you know, that's the thing to do in life. And you're the female that didn't want children. And so obviously you're broken because, you know, you got the daddy issues. He didn't want the children. You don't know what you're talking about, but don't worry. Stick with me. I'll help you through this. That was his tagline, was stick with me. So I think that's the answer, is like, that's how I saw the narcissistic. I think that's what it means, you know? I think. Is that the answer?
How did therapy help you pick apart where your responsibility was and where his was? How did you start to recognize the narcissism? Was it in therapy that you started that? Just talk to me about that.
Yeah, it was in therapy, but I really wanted the marriage to work. And so there was a large part of it where like, I was not accepting, you know, because I think that like, you know, you as the therapist, I can say that, right? You were guiding me to kind of like ask questions around like helping me to sort of pinpoint these realizations, right? But at the same time, I didn't want to. I mean, I was like, no. It's just, I need to work on myself more. And I need to get better at being in a relationship. And I need to not be so jealous about his kids. And so I just, there was a while where I was kind of denying it. And I think for even a while where, I don't want to say that I resented therapy, but where I was like, I'm not sure if this is helping me, because like it's just trying to point out that like Matt's doing something wrong. And I'm a part of the problem too. I'm in this relationship too. Relationships are 50-50. So I need to be able to fix my part, you know? So I think that's like where I evolved to. But then just, you know, as time went by and, you know, years went by, time went by, I definitely just was able to pick more up on the clues within our arguments or within our conversations or in the way that he treated me, sort of this demeaning way that he would just handle me. Like it was, there's the respect wasn't there. And the reciprocity between like the relationship was not there. You know, it was like, he was like, just, I was just a part of his life. you know, and there, it wasn't that he had to do anything to be in a relationship. He had to do the jobs. He had to travel. He had to take care of the kids. So I was just this, like, I just had to kind of tack on and figure out where I could fit in the gaps. And I saw that more and more. And as I brought that up more and more, we just became more, you know, I became just more aware of it. So it was a small thing with like a bunch of denial at the very front of it. Because I'd picked up my whole life. I'd moved from California. I mean, like everything was so different. I was completely, you know, I put all my eggs in this basket.
Right. And recognizing what was going on meant that you would have to upend your whole life.
Yeah. And that I'd made a big mistake. And that once again, that my decisions were not based in who I really am, but these superficial feelings of like, I don't want to be alone. And like the thing, all the reasons why you don't get into a relationship, like not thoroughly investigating this person before doing this. Like I felt foolish, like deep down, like fuck. But then I was just like, hey, you know, I'm that person who that can turn all things around. Like I've been able to do this all the time in my life. So this should be the same. Like people can change, you know? So I always wanted to like think that way. So
then you begin to recognize that he is a narcissist and where your responsibility to the marriage begins and ends. And then what did you do?
You know, it's what's weird about it is that I didn't really do anything as in like a conscious, like, okay, I'm going to do this. I slowly but surely I was just getting sick. Like my body started getting sick. I stopped sleeping really well. I just felt terrible. Like it started just manifesting in like all of this stuck in this, like, this is wrong. I'm being treated wrong. I can't be in this. Like it wasn't a mental thing. And like all of a sudden I just was unhappy, sick, trying to avoid being home. And so I didn't really consciously start to do anything. It's just my life all around me kind of started crumbling with my health and like where I wanted to spend my time. And so again, it's like, I didn't want to come to the mental realization that it was done. It was over, you know? And so, yeah, I mean, that's how it worked. I couldn't smart my way out of it and use my intellect to like figure out a plan. And it was like, everything started breaking down around me. So just to the point where like, I could not do it anymore. So, you know, it was a breaking point. Star that breaks the camel's back, you know, it was like one of those moments where like, all of a sudden, you know, it just was like, I saw it all. I knew what I had to do, and the pain of staying in it was worse than the pain of not knowing how it was going to unfold once I got the ball rolling. So I was like, okay, it's, you know, critical mass. It's time to kind of move forward. And, you know, also just rehearing through therapeutic sessions, like conversations that we had had and conversations around, you know, behaviors with my father and behaviors, you know, recalling what Matt had done in conversations that were just parallel and like really not just very destructive and selfish and narcissistic, you know, and not a part of a real relationship. And so just remembering those things, because my brain kept wanting to default back to like the good stuff, which is starting to get smaller and smaller and smaller in percentage of like how many times it happened. But just having that, that, you know, that stability around like, stay focused on like, on these things, because this is the reality, right? You can't just keep trying to like hold on to the fumes of a couple of good moments that happen here and there, where the whole thing is based around, you know, you needing to fit, and you needing to kind of stay in this small life with him.
And so where are you at now, and how does therapy fit into your life now?
So now that I'm out of the marriage, yay. And I'm just trying to figure out who I am. Trying to figure out who the fuck I am. Like, I really, you know, with him for about 8 years, and I'm just, I even don't even know to this day. Like, it's hard for me to kind of like pinpoint who I am, what I want. Like, I'm trying to figure it all out, like in my mid 40s, when like we should be well beyond figuring out these things. And just sort of like trying to also relive the pattern so I don't have to think about and like relive that again in the future. And so, yeah. And so it's just trying to kind of reconnect to those things and just remember the things that we don't want to repeat. Right. And so I think that's where therapy comes into play, and just trying to let go of those old habits and ways of thinking, and just, you know, embracing the new habits and ways of thinking. And I don't even know what those are completely. Like, I'm still, you know, even today, like, you know, I'm in between jobs, and I don't have a lot during the day. And it's just like, this should be the time I should be having a great time without a job. And I have one coming where I could do things I really want to do and like do those things I never get time to do, but I don't know what those are. Like, I'm so clueless. I've wandered so far away from who I am. It's just so crazy. It's so crazy, you know. And I've always been so like proud of myself that like, oh, you know who you are. I just, fuck that. No, I've been stripped down to a nub. And so moving forward now, I'm just like, how do we kind of rebuild into that? And that's I think where therapy is helpful.
Almost. Where do you see your therapeutic process going from this point forward?
I mean, that's a good question. You tell me. I mean, it's one of those things where, as I kind of relaunch myself into the world, I just want to be able to understand my boundaries big time, and have that rooted into like who I am, and even like some sort of vision for who I'm becoming in the future. So I think it's just having, I don't even know. Cause I mean, I don't know if it's like digging more into the stuff from the past, because again, I feel like there's been a lot of that. And I feel like just making sure that those patterns around the dysfunction don't repeat themselves in the future. And so, you know, maybe having those touch points in therapeutic sessions where, as I'm moving into this new phase, there's like checkpoints around like, how are you feeling? What are you coming across? Are you noticing any other patterns coming up? So I don't know if it's like a touch point coach type thing, or because again, we can keep diving into deeper things. And I think that we've done a lot of that, but I think it's just more around like, I just want to get, maybe I'm being in denial, but I just want to get beyond this pain and beyond this like feeling of kind of shame around getting into the marriage when I, you know, I kind of always had a weird deep down feeling about it. And so trusting that, so just trust, you know, having therapy sort of help you to trust yourself more and know that you have the kind of the power to self-provision and make it through like a more authentic future self. So that, I think, would be my answer.
Or it is your answer.
That's my answer.
Okay. And is there anything you want people to know about therapy or your process or how it can be helpful that I haven't asked yet or that you haven't told us?
I think that what I would say is, when we were working together, did I bring up the question around like, hey, I'm feeling a little defensive around like this realization that it might be Matt? Like, this would be like 5 years ago. I don't know if I ever actually like vocalized that to you or not, or if that was just something I was thinking.
Oh, it's something that came through in the way you would respond in your answers. I don't think you ever directly said it, but it was when I would poke at it, you would find reasons to excuse the behavior or explain the behavior or talk about your responsibility in the equation. Basically, you taking responsibility for the way he would handle a situation. Yeah, but I was what happened quite a bit.
Right. Okay. All right. Yeah. I think for me, it's just around, you know, the takeaway is that you just have to kind of completely just fall into trust. You know, you want to trust, you know, who you're seeing, but also just that whatever is coming up, it's something that you want to be able to talk about, even if it feels uncomfortable to talk about it. I think it's just really important to kind of bring that out into the light, where you could even have a debate with your therapist about it. So that would be really helpful, because maybe had I been more open to that, I could have come to conclusions faster. It was more of like a trying to like learn from you and like, you know, move into a different lesson. It wasn't anything where I even questioned.
So you're saying that don't be afraid to question the therapist and have the debate with them about, why are you asking this, or what are you getting at? Let's talk about this.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's it. Cause again, I didn't want to have confrontation with you. You know,
something you don't want to shy away from in therapy, have the confrontation. It's a safe place to have it.
Right. Yeah. And so I think that's the takeaway. There's just going to be things that you don't, that just don't pop up right away. So you have to kind of like trust more of a longer term approach, where time has gone by and habits and behaviors have repeated themselves, to where you can actually start to, you know, see it all come together as far as like the incidents that you're working through, along with, you know, what's happening in a therapeutic session. You have to give it some time. You know, like, I think that was another big thing that I feel is really great about working with you. I've known you now for a long time, so you've seen me through all the things. And so I really think that there's a benefit there to something more long-term.
That's really great to hear, especially in sort of a therapeutic climate where 12 sessions and you're fixed. That's not always the case. For you, you did therapy for a while and then took a break in there for a couple of years, year or two?
Yeah. I mean, you and I had different times where there was some breaks, maybe once or twice that happened, actually. I think it happened once. But and I'd tap you back on the shoulder like a year or so later. And that was really helpful, because again, having someone with that trained eye and perspective to sort of come back in and say, where are you now? Was really helpful to kind of reframe it again and sort of re-remember what happened from that perspective. Because again, I only have my own perspective. I'm living in my own brain, but like, you've been kind of with me through these touch points throughout the years. And so I think that was really beneficial.
Great. Well, thank you for sharing your story with us.
Thank you.
Well, we figured out along the way that the marriage just isn't working.
No.
And that you knew it.
Yep.
And you just couldn't come to see it yet, or you couldn't allow yourself to see it.
And unfortunately, and this happens to some people, but it takes years for them to get to it. Like some people,
yeah,
it takes like 10, whatever, many, many years of like trudging through it. But like, my body was starting to break down, and I knew exactly the reason why it was happening. I almost couldn't avoid it. And again, I think I'm kind of lucky because of that. So I wasn't in it for 2 or 3 decades.
So dear listener, this is typically the time when the microphones go off and the screen goes dark, but I kept the conversation going with Antonia, and I asked her, when is she ready to date, even if it's in that fun sort of way? And that kicked off a more casual conversation about where she's at, not only about dating, but about other things in life too.
And even in a fun way, that's very non-committal, very short term, I'll get there, but I'm just not there right now. I'm still feeling really broken.
How about art? Have you re-engaged with your art?
Not yet either. Again, it's like when you're with someone, a narcissist, you get stripped down, you know, and you become unrecognizable. So, I mean, I think that all of that will come back, but right now I'm just trying to.
Have you put yourself in environments where your creativity could come back?
I have, actually. I've tried to force myself to do it.
Okay.
But I'm not. I just like, because I know actually sometimes that works. Sometimes I'm like, just put your body where you need it to be and then like just give it 30 seconds, you know, and just see if something clicks. But it's just, there's a lot of shame around him that I remember that he would talk to me about, you know, about who I was when I was an artist and how it was all over the place and unpredictable and I never saved money and good thing he came along to save me. And so I'm just like, I'm not there yet. The fucker fucked me up.
Yep. He did. But you're stronger than that too. And so you will rise up out of this.
Yeah.
As you have professionally.
I've done it before. I can do it again. I know I'll fucking do it again. I will. I'm not even sure of anything. I need to like feel like that stability underneath my feet. I need to feel like, hey, I did this. I made this job happen and I'm moving through it. And I just need to kind of get some other things. I think it'll all naturally come. And I think maybe not focusing on it too much anymore will help.
So that reminds me of a quote that I really like that I was looking at as I was making the newsletters for the other stuff. It says, truth, like love and sleep, resents approaches that are too intense. Right? So like you got to come at truth gently.
Yeah, sometimes you do. For sure. Especially if it's a truth. Yeah, I mean, there's different levels of it, right? Sometimes it just can't be in your conscious mind right away, right there in the open, like a sign. It just is something that has to kind of come back and emerge, because like my identity didn't get stripped down overnight either. It took years for them to wear me down.
Yeah.
And not seeing the signs in the beginning of like what narcissistic people do and the love bombing and all of that. Like I was overcome with how amazing it was in the beginning, right?
After, and then we're always trying to get back to that amazing place, right? So like they love bomb and then things get really shitty, but you have this vision of the love bomb time in your life and you're always chasing that. And it allows you to sort of forgive all the things in the present because you know they're capable of that thing in the love bomb phase.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Because they're so charming. You know, they've based their life on being the confident know-it-alls and they understand. And so it's yeah. And then they know how to like find little weak points.
Oh, and weaponize them against you, right?
Oh yeah. Oh, 100%. Like there was no such thing as like real true intimacy where I could be vulnerable, because I knew that it would come back around and be like a lion on my neck. So it's like I couldn't be open. I couldn't trust. I couldn't, all of that. I knew I wasn't respected. God, it was all the worst things, you know, just someone who brings out the worst in you. I turned into an angry, artless bitch. You know, I know now 100%. I don't know anything except that whomever I'm with in the future, I want to feel like they're bringing the best out of me and I'm bringing the best out of them. It doesn't have to be anything else. It just has to be this, like, you know, it's not the tearing down of someone. It's like, this person makes me feel like I'm the best version of myself. And even though there might be hard times and even though I might trip and get upset because they're calling me out on something, ultimately it's because they love and respect me so much and they see this bigger part of me. And I want that feeling. Like I never had that feeling. It was always this like contraction feeling, this like, you know, okay, get into the box. You know, you can fit into it. You know what I mean? And like, and who is this? And yeah, why do I have needs? Of course. I mean, I'm not as important as him. I mean, he's the one with the children and, you know, and that means that he's well up on the level of humans that are doing the better things in the world. And I'm just the dumb art school girl that, you know, doesn't bring anything to anyone.
I hope you can hear it as you're saying it, of just how insidious it is. And like narcissists play the long game too. It's just peppering little bits here and there. You take the chance, you're vulnerable. They pour lemon juice on it. When that doesn't make you pliable enough, then they pour salt in with the lemon juice. And then when that doesn't work, they stomp on it to make sure it gets really ground in until you're just completely flat out and pliable. And then repeat. And do it all in the name of, I love you so much. Can't you see what I'm doing for your benefit? Or there's just complete intolerance of your experience of the relationship.
Absolutely. Stick with me. Don't worry. You're broken and everything, but you stick with me and I'll fix it. I'll fix you.
Yeah. And we're of the Disney princess generation that wants the knight in shining armor that will do that for us.
Yeah. It's so fucked up. Yeah. And then even throughout the divorce stuff, he was just like, okay, yeah, I know you got to do your thing and like file your little papers and like act like you're going to like go through with this. But like, you know, I'll let you have that. You can have that, you know, but once we get back together, you know.
Once you calm down and you get over this.
Yeah. But you're having.
I'll take you back.
Yeah, you're having one of your episodes again, and it's caused from those issues you had with your father and the fact that, you know, it's just so insidious. It's so crazy. Oh my God. That's never going to happen again.
And that's where my conversation with Antonia really ended. Look, you can't open a social media app without seeing the word narcissism thrown around like it's just confetti. It's everywhere. And everyone that has needs or wants that overshadow yours gets slapped with the label of being a narcissist. It's the latest in pop psychology, and it's having its moment as the latest word du jour. Remember when we labeled all neat freaks as having OCD, and we're all still really holding our boundaries? Look, it's true we all have narcissistic moments, but having a moment is vastly different than having a personality organized around narcissism. Moments don't cause emotional damage, but being in a relationship with someone, romantic or not, who consistently sees the world from a position of superiority can do emotional damage. If you think you might be in a relationship or friendship with someone with a narcissistic personality, or maybe you're not even sure, but social media posts aren't giving you the information you need, it's time to talk it out. Apricity Expat Therapy currently has 3 licensed and experienced therapists with immediate availability. We're not looking to label you, your partner, your friend, or anyone else. We're here to support your emotional and mental health needs in whatever capacity you want in a way that social media just can't do. Visit our website at Apricity Expat Therapy to schedule a free consultation today.